Welcome to the Pilates Progressions Program. I'm Katrina Foe, your host for tonight, and I'm so excited to join you with some answers to some of the questions you guys have sent in this past week. I've got quite a few emails here, so we're going to try to get through everything today. And, of course, if you want to call in live, that always takes first preference. And the number to do that is 347-838-9945. It's the same number every week, so I'll say it again for you that don't have it written down. It's 347-838-9945. So you can just program it into your phone and be ready on speed dial for next week if you don't have it already memorized. So first off, just a little thought that I want to remind everyone. We had a question that somebody asked me earlier today about scheduling and New Year's, like adjusting your schedule because of New Year's, and you know what adjustments they should make in terms of trying to make sure they got enough New Year's clients and stuff. So I just wanted to give a couple of thoughts on that. So when people call in for New Year's, a lot of times it's not necessarily that there's a certain time spot people are always looking for. I mean, it's just like any other time of the year people are looking for, you know, whatever fits into their schedule, and that could be who knows what. So there's not like a magic number, although, you know, 9, 10 o'clock are always kind of prime spots and such. So if you don't have those open, definitely try to get those open. But just some tips in general that I wanted to mention. I would encourage people, you know, whether you're working at Personalized Pilates and doing your apprenticeship there, or if you're doing the P3 program somewhere else globally, I just encourage you that when you're an instructor at Estria, whether you're an apprentice and in training or you're a regular instructor, a couple little tips to get more clients. First off, I would recommend keeping your eye out on the schedule and keeping your ear open for when other instructors are going out of town. They're going to go on vacation, or they're sick, or if they are, you know, have a death in the family or things like that, or if they're leaving the studio. Say they've graduated and they're finishing their apprenticeship, or if they are moving, or you know, whatnot. You know, that these kind of situations happen a lot. Unfortunately, more than we as studio owners would prefer. But if you keep your ears open, a lot of times you can help out the studio by getting opening some availability up, even if it's just temporary. Even if, you know, say Susie Joe is going to be gone for 3 weeks in March. You know, if you just open up some extra time slots that you might not usually be able to do consistently, but you open it up then, you know, you might be able to help the studio out, which goes a long way. You might be able to pick up some extra hours because whoever is going out of town might be able to have their clients work with you. And possibly those clients like you and stick. You never know. So, you know, at our studio, we're not competitive. It's not like these are my clients. Because we don't have independent contractors. They're all studio clients, and we actually encourage our clients to take with lots of different instructors. And we found that it's a really big benefit to the client to take with multiple people ongoing. So, you know, they might take with Anna on Mondays and Kelly on Thursdays, and that's fine. There's no competition. The instructors work well together and share notes and stuff. And the clients find it to be a blessing because they hear things differently from different people. Different people stress things differently. They teach a little differently. They have them do different things. And that's a cool thing. And quite frankly, if I was a client, that's what I would like. But not all studios work that way. But if they do work that way, you can really get some extra hours and, you know, a little brown nosing doesn't hurt, helping the studio out to not just drop those clients. And, you know, whoever's going out of town will really appreciate that their clients being taken good care of. So that's one thing, is to just keep your ears and eyes open. And especially if somebody's moving or leaving the studio, that is a fantastic time because all those clients of that person are going to be going somewhere. And if you open up some time slots and, you know, let people know that you're available, you can really you know, help yourself and get some new clients that way. So that's a huge, huge way of getting new clients. Also, I would recommend, instead of when you're looking at what schedule you're going to set, you know, looking at your schedule and what works best for you, I would also recommend looking at what the studio needs are. we have had so many people go through training and do their apprenticeship, and it's so funny because a lot of times they'll give us these hours like 12 to 5, like the deadest time ever, and then they're like, why am I not getting full? And they're all whining about it, and I'm like, oh my goodness, like these are terrible hours. You need to be here in the morning or in the evening, not in the middle of the afternoon. And no matter how much we tell them that they won't change their schedule, you know, it's fine if they can't. That's no problem. But don't whine to us because you're choosing the bad hours. You know, people are extremely upset because they didn't get as many hours as this other person, and we're looking at their schedules and like, you know, it's not even possible. And usually when people are in the apprentice program, you know, they're new instructors, whatever, they just don't know that. They don't know what the prime hours are, and there's nothing wrong with that. But ask the studio, wherever you're working, what are the prime hours? And it's pretty universal from studio to studio, city to city. But you know, not too many studios are slammed and their peak hours are at 2 in the afternoon. I've never heard of that. It's kind of a universal dead time. And that doesn't mean there aren't people in there and things happening. We have clients that come in quite often at that time, but it's not the most often sought out for, you know, kind of time. So look at what the studio needs are, not just your own. And if you can at all, adjust your schedule so that you are free to work at the studio and be available to take clients at the peak hours. So that might mean, you know, swapping whatever other things are going on in your life around so that works better. And that's just so that you'll get fuller. So if you're in training, that means you'll get done faster and able to earn money faster. Or if you are out of training, it means you'll get full and you'll, you know, have more clients and it'll just go quicker. All right. The other third thing I wanted to say about schedules is that it's really important. We've got some newbies that are kind of hanging back and not getting, so they're taking clients and they're kind of dragging their heels. And I don't care when you're listening to this. If you're in the training program, listen up. This is for you. If you have not started teaching, get going. Okay, the first person out the gates usually gets the worm. Okay, they get the big scoop of clients. And right now is the time, especially with New Year's clients that need apprentices and want apprentices because they want the cheaper stuff and everything. There's a great opportunity for whoever's listening. If you get going, you'll probably scoop it all up. So just a little side note. Hopefully those tips help. And if you have questions on those, ask myself more details. You email me, or you can email Larry because he's the one that knows scheduling stuff like that. Okay? So let's see. All right, questions. All right, we have a follow-up from our discussion with the young girl with the scoliosis that played tennis last week. And I just want to read all this and give some more notes. We have a lot of great questions and thoughts in here that I want to expand on. And I want to give you a little follow-up from last week. So if you haven't listened to last week's episode, I would recommend maybe pausing this and going back and listening to it because this might not make as much sense. All right, she wrote, thank you for your lecture on the radio show. I couldn't catch the last 10 minutes. I don't know if it's my phone or what, so I'll try again later on my computer and see if I can get it. Hopefully you got it. The information with her niece was extremely helpful, as well as a boost in confidence for me specifically. We did reform her today, and she did well. Wiggly, but she's a good listener. The issues with flexion, I wanted to be a bit clearer. I really meant loaded flexion, short spine, rollover, corkscrew tower, etc. I completely agree with all the other degrees of flexion, and the book I was referring to does as well. In fact, that's really the main reason to work Pilates with children, because they need to encourage that flexion, rotation, and side bending. There was a specific chapter or section about the spine and loaded flexion with a certain age group, and I will re-reference and be more specific with what they were talking about and share that info with you to get your thoughts on the matter. My timidness with other flexion came from wondering if that was the best thing for her scoliosis. I have heard from several clients coming in and one of my own that their doctors have been discouraging flexion because of their scoliosis. I'm not sure why this is, but I hear it a lot. Is it because they're worried about the ribs on the collapsed side? Why do you think they would say that? Okay, I'm gonna come back to this in a little bit. Actually, you know what? I'm going to pause this and go ahead and mention this, because otherwise I might get lost. So for children, I'm so glad to hear it was not just flexion in general. I think the big thing with loaded flexion if you looked at the specific exercises she mentioned that, you know, we talk about with loaded flexion, tower, short spine, rollover, all that kind of stuff, first off, there are some loaded flexion that are not like this. I just want to highlight that and make sure this is an all-encompassing comment. So things like spine stretch on the chair is actually loaded flexion. But again, most of the loaded flexion is going to be stuff rollover-like. And I would say the biggest reason not to do that with children is not because the loaded flexion per se in and of itself is so bad, but because that rolled over position, there's a really high chance with children, they tend to be spazzes, and like we mentioned last time, but they tend to go too far. Okay, so what happens if you roll over and you fling yourself too far? You roll right onto your neck. And again, especially a young person, their neck, not good. Okay, so this can happen with anybody, and this is why I think that those rollover things, while fantastic exercises, do need to be done with caution and especially control. And you want to explain to people, don't roll over so that your weight's on your head. This is really easy to avoid with children. Just grab a hold of their ankles and prevent them from going too fast, too far. And it's very simple, especially if you're working private with them. Again, that's not going to happen with everybody. That's a gross oversimplification of the issue, but just watch out for that. I would love to hear more about what the PMA said specifically about loaded flexion with a certain age group, if they were talking about the same issue or if they were talking about some other aspect. I'm guessing it's some other aspect of it, so I'd love to hear what their aspect was, if there's some research they've found on that that I haven't heard of. So that's always fun. Okay, so I'm going to continue on with her letter. She wrote, "With her being a child and her mother wanting me so badly to focus on the spine, I was getting a bit psyched out. I remember very clearly all your lectures on scoliosis from the show and the P3 program. I know cueing to ideal is the best way, especially with her age. If she is constantly reminded and memorizes the feelings of neutral place, not natural place, she will train her muscles to straighten out. There is just so much material and opinion on Pilates and scoliosis, I feel. Different pieces of equipment, and I have an article about all these really intrinsic things. I think it's meant for people in pain or much more mature set in scoliosis, but it becomes overwhelming." Okay, so I want to address this. Okay, I 110% agree with you about scoliosis in particular. There are so many different workshops and books and articles and stuff. I think partially because scoliosis can be helped so much with Pilates. I mean, the difference in the results are profound, and they're oftentimes just, it's amazing. Now, the reason that we want to talk about scoliosis does not cause pain. Okay, so I want everyone to hear that, because most of the issues that we talk about here, you know, cause pain. You talk about, you know, a stenosis or a disc issue or, you know, some arthritis or, you know, whatever it is, there's pain involved. And scoliosis doesn't cause pain. Okay, so what is the problem with scoliosis? Why do we care about scoliosis? Well, first, there's a huge aesthetic thing. Okay, I want that to really resonate and sink in. This is partially an aesthetic thing. People, you know, look like hunchbacks when they have scoliosis oftentimes. You think of a young girl, which is, you know, the largest population is girls that get scoliosis. It's much higher incidence in girls and females in general. So, I mean, we are always more interested in aesthetics, and to think we're lopsided and stuff, it's not a good thing. Very high social stigmas and stuff with that. But there's no pain. The other thing with scoliosis is that you're going to have problems with other things, contributing factors later on, because of the compensations you have to make because of scoliosis. So it's not the scoliosis that's necessarily causing the problem. It's the muscle imbalances that are going on because of scoliosis, which is kind of interesting chicken and egg question where, you know, if the scoliosis is a muscle imbalance or caused by a muscle imbalance, which it can be, you know, which one causes which. But, for example, if you've got scoliosis, it might throw your pelvis off, which might cause back pain, you know. And that's not the scoliosis. It's the muscle imbalances caused by the scoliosis and such, and twisted hips and other things because it spirals out. So I just want to be clear, the actual physical side bending and twisting motion of scoliosis isn't actually causing pain. It's the compensatory stuff. Now, the real big issue and why they look for scoliosis so much is because when scoliosis progresses far enough, it can cause breathing problems. Now, this depends on the individual case of scoliosis, where the scoliosis is in the spine, where the curves are, where the rotation is, and how severe it is. And for most people, this has no effect whatsoever. This is not an issue. But this is the reason that they would do surgery when they do surgery. It's because the lungs are getting collapsed in on so much that they are having a hard time breathing. And that's a serious issue, and that can cause problems, I mean, in terms of just being able to live, kind of a big deal. So what they're doing is they're straightening the person up enough and supporting them by putting rods in their spine or fusing the vertebrae so that the lungs are not being collapsed in on and they can breathe. Okay, so that's a big thing. So if you can help alleviate some of those muscle imbalances and get them strength to keep them upright and keep in good posture as much as possible, you're possibly preventing some of those breathing issues. So that's a really important thing. So when you talk about breathing with them, huge. Now, it doesn't sound like hers is that bad where she's having any breathing issues, especially, as you mentioned last time, where this particular case, she got the breathing really easily. If she was having breathing problems, first off, the doctor would be talking about surgeries and such already with her, and she would not be able to do those breathing things. But I think the breathing exercises that you're talking about, the one lung breathing and such from the principles, is very important to do with her for this reason. And scoliosis in particular, you know, one side will be harder than the other. And that's good. That's what you want to focus on is, okay, feel the good side, now work on the hard side kind of thing. Okay, now another thing I want you to keep in mind. So first off, scoliosis. Why is scoliosis an issue? Why should we work on it? That kind of thing. We got to know what that's going on and what's going on there. But second, I want you to think about the situation with continuing education. Okay, so a lot of people are selling products. Okay, so if they're a teacher trainer or such, they're selling products. And, you know, people that are when I started teaching Pilates, there wasn't all this Pilates for golf, Pilates for scoliosis, Pilates for horseback riders. They didn't have all that. You taught Pilates. There it was. Pilates, that's how it is. And it was very straightforward. And although I enjoy understanding all the different conditions and the different athletic endeavors, and I think that's important if you're working with clients, it's not something necessary. Your teaching straightforward Pilates is actually really important, and it's really the most important thing, if you will, to the person actually getting better. So just be aware that there's a lot of different viewpoints on it. And in particular, when you're reading an article about Pilates for scoliosis or taking a workshop or something, just remember the reason scoliosis gets so confusing is because the scoliosis, say that 500 times and you'll lose it too. Scoliosis can occur anywhere in the spine. And the way it manifests, how deep the curve, if it's an S curve where there's, two curves, or if there's one curve, a C curve, and then where it is in the spine and how curvy it is and all that stuff, will manifest itself completely differently for each person. And so because of that, you have completely different cues and exercises that are more appropriate from one scoliotic client to another. So a lot of times they get very, very complex and esoteric in talking about the scoliosis in different case studies, and it seems very, very overwhelming. And one of the things I like to think that I do well in teaching is that I try to make it simple. I want to keep it clear so that you don't get stressed out and overwhelmed, and you know what you're good at as an instructor. You already know this stuff. You're already good at it. Don't let it freak you out. So I want to just validate that you know how to teach well. You know the basic alignment. If you understand what ideal is, what it would look like if a perfect person, who there is no perfect person, were doing this, what would it look like? And what would they feel? If you understand that on every exercise and you cue your client towards that, validate they're not going to get there, but cue them towards it nonetheless, you are helping them in the best way possible. Okay, now, is it bad to study all these different aspects and examples of scoliosis? Absolutely not. But I want to emphasize that, you know, we talked about this girl in depth, and I gave you lots of different ideas on how to teach her, what to teach her, and cues and ideas, and I haven't seen this person, okay? I didn't ask where her curve was in her spine. I didn't ask which direction or any of that stuff. The bottom line is, if you give specific generic cues, that's an oxymoron, right? So specific meaning very targeted to that person, but general in terms of they're generic and that they could be used on any person with any exercise, then you can really target what they need. So example I gave last week was, say you're doing some kind of articulating spine, so whether it's roll up, roll down, roll bridging, you know, any of those kinds of things. When you talk about articulation, instead of just saying one vertebrae at a time, if you talk about feeling both sides of your back touching the mat evenly and at the same time, what you're going to be doing is unrotating the side that tends to rotate without even having to, like, cue that. And so you skip over the part of you trying to figure out which direction which vertebrae needs to twist, which is usually, you know, when I watch instructors at workshops where they're talking about that in those really detailed ways, you know, people's eyes start to cross because they're like, oh, what's, which direction does it go? And they're counter-nutation, all this stuff. You don't have to think about that. The client doesn't have to try to think about that and feel that, and yet they're getting the same movement. Okay, so it works, and it just, there's so much that people can get caught up on the details. And a lot of times people in the Pilates field really enjoy that. And it's a fun thing to discuss. Well, you know, L5 is rotating, you know, counterclockwise, and, you know, then this is happening at L, you know, whatever, too. And that's fine. That's great. But it's not necessary to really cue it well. And we want to make sure that when we're teaching our clients, we don't talk over their head and we don't make them feel, you know, and we don't confuse ourselves so that they don't get good Pilates. And the most important thing is that you don't just water it down for them so that they don't actually get a workout. I've seen so many instructors that they get so scared and paranoid about hurting the person or the conditions they have, and they basically just, like, breeze with them. Or they'll do, like, you know, maybe a pelvic clock because they're just so overwhelmed, and they do pretty much nothing with them. And the person needs to work. Oh, excuse me. What helps them is movement. And so we want to get them moving. We just want to make sure that we're in touch with them and we're doing it appropriately. So I really want to validate that for you. Sorry, I got a tickle in my throat. That what you're feeling about being overwhelmed with all the information about Pilates and scoliosis, you are so in good company. And I bet that a lot of other people are going, yes, yes, I felt that. I've seen that. I've experienced that. If you haven't worked with somebody with scoliosis or studied it much, just be aware if you do that there's a lot going on there, and you don't need to get freaked out about it and caught up in it, okay? You can if you want. I enjoy that, but again, it's not necessarily what's going to help the client. Just like it's not going to help the client to sit there and talk about the origins and insertions and, you know, list all, well, your semimembranosus is going this direction, blah, blah, blah. You need to understand that, but you don't need to talk that with your client. It's not actually going to help them. Okay, so I'm going to go back to her letter. She wrote, I also had a question for you regarding glute medius connection with IT band pain. I read this very short article in one of the magazines here at the studio about foam rolling and specifically IT band rolling. I'm going to guess that was in Pilates style because we have a lot of those out there, but it could be one of the Idea Fitness or some of those magazines, just for those of you that are wondering. One of the issues they were talking about was how the IT band can become tight because it's not getting enough assistance from glute medius, causing the IT band to overwork, and foam rolling won't help and may even worsen the situation. Insights? I can try and find the article again. I just saw another article that had tips for foam rolling, most of which I knew, but I was wondering if I sent you the link if you wouldn't mind taking a look. I would love to take a look. I always love the links you guys send because usually they're fantastic things. So please feel free. Okay, so thoughts on the IT band. Last week we talked about for her knee issues. So she had some patellofemoral syndrome, just for those of you that might not have listened. And we talked about what that is and everything, and I mentioned rolling the IT bands could be really helpful because of how they the fascia will come and attach in with the fascia around the kneecap, even though that's not officially where it attaches, and it can actually be affecting the patella tracking, the kneecap tracking. So here's the thing. We talk about this in the anatomy in three dimensions that we teach at Personalized Pilates. So if you haven't taken that, you know, this might be something you enjoy. But what's going on there is you've got this kind of, it's almost like a peace sign. If you think of looking at the side outside of your thigh, the lateral side, from the side, and imagine, you know, from underneath the ASIS down the side of the thigh to the outside of the tibia, that's where the IT band runs. And it's just a tendon, okay? So iliotibial tendon track, and it's fascia band, okay? Connective tissue. So what is it doing? Well, it's a stabilizer for other muscles. So from the backside, the posterior side of the body, you have glute max that comes in and attaches to it. And from the front side, you have your tensor fascia lata. Okay, now, I'm not sure where they're getting this glute medius connection. Maybe they're talking about other internal rotators just as a whole, because glute medius is one that works in cooperatively with tensor fascia lata. But what's going on with tensor fascia lata and glute max is it kind of makes like a Y shape. So the base of the Y is that IT band, and then you've got the anterior side of the top of the Y is tensor fascia lata, and the posterior side is glute max. So if you think about it, you've got this kind of tug of war going on, and they both use the same tendon to get stability. So if they are not working cooperatively and are nice and even muscle balancing wise, you're going to have too much tension being placed on the IT band. All right, now think about that. Tensor fascia lata. Who works that? Who focuses on that? Who is super strong there? Glute max. Same questions. Okay, do you see a little discrepancy? Because you see people working their glute max like out the wazoo all the time. And I find a lot of clients, not all of them, some people cannot find their glute max, and some people are really weak there. I want to state that for the record, but a lot of them cannot turn it off. And so it's like this perma-lockdown, clenched butt cheek thing. And, you know, you try to do, like, articulating bridge, and they can't even use their hamstrings because it's all glute max hip extensor. And they can't, you know, find how to use their hamstrings to hip extend because it's always glute max. And they, you know, so they've just got way too much going on in there, and turning it off will help bring some relief and release to the IT band. So I would say that working on the IT band is partially foam roller work to release that. So it's kind of a complementary thing with trying to get the muscle balancing going on in the hip and thigh in general. So whether it's too much tension and strength and tightness in the glute max, or it's too much weakness in the tensor fascia lata, you know, glute medius, all that area, you know, inner thighs, VMO, vastus medialis, meaning those kinds of things, it could be any of those. It could be all of them. But working on that muscle balancing really detailed will take some tension off your IT band. In my opinion, doing a little foam roller won't hurt, and it could speed the process up. I am not sure exactly why they're saying it could actually make it worse. I'm going to guess and say that it could make it worse if they're also doing things to make that imbalance worse. So if they're not working on the muscle imbalance and they're just working on foam rolling, I think they're destabilizing what's trying to stabilize that muscle imbalance, and it could cause problems. But that's not what you were doing, because I was telling you to work on the muscle imbalances as well as the foam roller. Okay, so hopefully that's clear and that makes sense, and hopefully that little anatomy lesson is clear. Get a picture. I'm sure you can find some on the web. Google is such a blessing, isn't it? What did people do before the internet? I don't even remember. But you can see some side views are really great to see this. If you can get a good anatomy side view, it's great. Netter's got some nice ones that are really clear for that. Okay, let's see. She also wrote, I recently tried as a tester this hamstring series that a kinesiologist came up with. The website's easyflexibility.com. I downloaded the immediate intermediate hamstring series. The website caught my eye based on those great little videos they show with the anatomy posed in different positions. Then they highlight what's being extended, flexed, contracted, etc. If you have a moment, could you go check out the site and watch any one of the trailers they have posted? I'd love to hear your opinion about it. These are the exercises Zoe likes so much. Okay, so I kind of blasted most stretching programs last time because most, and again, that was a generality that I went with there, are passive. And they're passive stretching where you get into a position and you just hold it and try to relax into it. And the problem with that is that your muscles have a built-in reflex called the stretch reflex that will hold the tension in them. And they're doing that so they don't get pushed and stretched into a position that they are not capable of being safe in. Okay, so this is an injury prevention reflex that's, you know, built into your body for a reason. And so what, you know, people do is they hold the stretch and they breathe into it and all stuff. And if you hold it for 30 to, you know, 60 or even 90 seconds, depending on the person, that stretch reflex lets go and you can release into it. And most people figure if my muscles let go and I all of a sudden I can do this great stretch, then it must be a good thing. No, your body has that reflex to protect itself. And you sitting there and holding it till it lets go is not necessarily a good thing. So what happens is after you let go, you're going to a place that your body did not think you were ready for. And usually people push into it. You know, they've already, you know, hopefully warmed up and they're going to a place they shouldn't go. And they'll get some ripping and micro tears at the muscle. And the next day they're sore. And our society and fitness gurus nowadays have told us that is a good thing. That's not a good thing. Not a good thing. That awful feeling when you stretch too far does not feel good, and it does not change the muscle resting length, which is the whole point. Muscle resting length is the length that where your muscles are and how open the joints are, meaning where you are walking around, where your muscles sit, so that what can your body do flexibility-wise without having to overcome that stretch reflex and get into a place and warm up for, you know, an hour and stuff to be able to do that stuff. That's not a good thing. So I blasted all that, and that's kind of some of the anatomy behind it, because I didn't talk about that last week a whole lot. I just talked about in general. Well, I looked at this website, easyflexibility.com, and I actually liked it. So I want to take, you know, and mention that it looked, again, I only looked at some of the little trailer videos they had. I haven't downloaded any of the series or anything, but it looked like they were actual exercises where they're actively working the muscles, and he looked like he had some really interesting slants on the anatomy and was looking at it very detailed. So I really liked it. Every once in a while, there's some good fitness people out there that are doing good stuff, and I think he might be one of them. So I don't want to say for sure because I haven't looked at it that extensively, but it did look really good, and I thought it was really interesting. And I'll tell you what, marketing-wise, he's got pretty much every sport listed and if things for that sport, so he's very targeted. Not necessarily focused on pain issues, but athletic-wise, very interesting. So if you're interested in that, I would check it out, and you guys can give me your feedback if you do check it out, what you think. So I just want to mention a thank you and a heads up on that. Okay, and then she wrote back, I thought it looked good, and she wrote back that, you know, she was excited about them, and she wrote that she did a basic lesson today, pretty close to an intro plan, and those exercises are great and fundamental, as she thinks. I think it was very good for both of us because I felt more confident and in my element. Sometimes too much information is a bad thing. You start to get overwhelmed and question what you think you know. Thanks, as always, for your kindness and guidance. So just want to validate you're on the right track. Keep it going and keep challenging her. So push her. I would recommend, you know, pushing to do some of the normal class lesson plans or something along those lines. And you might have to modify stuff, but I think you'll really be able to get some good progress and stuff once she gets there. So excellent work. Okay, let's see. Check and see. All right, next question. Let's see what we got here. Okay, Katrina, I was wondering if there was a way to index the radio shows. I know you have descriptions written, but there's over 80 shows now. I'd like to listen to all the shows on a particular topic, but I don't want to try and read through all the descriptions. Any ideas? Haha, good one. Okay, so yes, there are over 80 shows now. I'm shocked at how quickly we've gotten so many shows, which I guess, you know, you do 50-some shows a year, it adds up quickly. But there isn't any way to index the shows on iTunes or on Blog Talk Radio, which are the two places that you can download them at this point. However, I want to mention that if you go to Blog Talk Radio and in the search area, if you do a search for the topic that you're looking at and you're trying to find, you can do a search and it'll search through the descriptions for you. So it kind of works like an index. I would put Pilates and then, you know, whatever the issue is. So say Pilates and children. And I would try different, you know, adjectives that are similar, you know, synonyms. So Pilates, children, kids, youth, whatever, because it's going to look for the exact word of what I typed in the description. So you might want to put Pilates, weight, obesity, you know, whatever, and look up things that way. So hopefully that'll help you guys if you're looking for a certain specific thing. A lot of times, I always try to get something about every topic we cover in the description, okay? The descriptions are not like the most elegantly written things, but I just want to have so that you can find out what it's about generally and not have to listen to the whole thing and be like, yeah, that had nothing about scoliosis, and that's what I was looking for. I want you to just kind of be able to filter stuff that way. So, I mean, I'll have the exact word, but look for, you know, the synonyms. I think you'll be able to find it on that search. If you have further questions or anybody has an idea about that, let me know, and hopefully that will help you out. Okay, next question. She wrote, "Hi, Katrina. I liked the Facebook page for Stop Pilates and recently saw this video." And the video is called, she's got a little link here. It says, "Stop Pilates, Athletic Conditioning on the VO2 Max Plus." And it's got a little video, which I watched for her. She wrote, "If you can't view it, it's the reverse knee stretch on the reformer using the push-through bar. I know the knee stretch isn't a new exercise, but how do I learn these variations with the use of both the reformer and tower? Do these exercises do something different than the old versions? They say they're only using one spring, ?" Should I understand that? Is it one red spring? Basie does that too. They quote, "We are using two springs," or "We are using a light spring." I know I can figure out what spring to use on my own, but I'd like to know how close I come to their idea of a light spring. I'm not really looking to use these exercises for my clients, but I'd love to try some of them for myself since I have a reformer tower. I just want to do them correctly. Thanks. Okay, so several things. First off, in case you haven't seen the stop machine we're talking about, it's basically a reformer with the tower off the back end. So there's lots of different companies that put out this model. Balance Body has several different models of this, and they originated it, so it's been around a long time. So the Allegros have a tower you can put on the back end, and you know, so do all the equipment. You know, they have the reformers. You can pretty much put a tower on the back end. And so what this particular video is doing is it's using the tower springs, and in this case the push-through bar, while you're using the reformer. So you're not putting the platform piece down on top of the reformer and using it like a regular tower. You're using the two pieces together. Now, first off, this is not the way Joe used his equipment. Joe did not have towers on his reformers. Okay, he had Cadillacs, he had wall unit towers, and he had what's called the guillotine tower, which was actually a tower that was attached up to the ceiling, and it was in the middle of the room. So there were a couple exercises that are different, but a lot of the exercises were like a regular tower and things that you can do on the Cadillac. There's a cool variation of the short spine that's on there and a couple other things, but most of it's all the same. And I've only seen a guillotine tower at one studio before, so they're not very common. I think mainly because it's really hard when you're renting space and stuff to install that into the ceiling. let's see. So this is not a classical thing is what I'm trying to emphasize. This is really cool stuff that people have done with the equipment and then therefore, you know, gotten creative with. The exercise, reverse knee stretch, is very classical, so to speak, but it's not done in this way. And I love exercises like this where you take it and put it in on a new piece of equipment and do it, you know, and again, totally different flavor. And you will see a lot of that in the P3 program with the extra 150 extra bonus exercises that you get. I've done that a lot in the studio with the class lesson plans. There's a lot of that thrown in, especially the work that we've done on the ladder barrel. Okay, so the ladder barrel choreography is usually pretty slim, and I have adapted and put a lot of the other work onto the ladder barrel, like the 100. I've never seen anyone else do the 100 on the ladder barrel, but we do it all the time at our studio, and it's fabulous there. So there's lots of different things you can do. Okay, so with that, I just want to say there is no classical choreography, and there's not one place that you can go to learn these variations because it's not codified. It's not a set choreography. It's not like the PMA has coverage over that because, again, it's not classical. And that's why I want to make that distinction between classical and non-classical and stuff. And while I think the classical repertoire is great, I think that Joe would have gone beyond that for sure. I mean, look at the stuff he created. It's ridiculous to say it stops there when he died. So where do you go to get that stuff? Well, obviously, you could buy the stop video that they have on athletic conditioning on their V2 Max Plus. And you don't have to have the V2 Max Plus to do that choreography. You could do it on, the Allegros or, you know, any of those things if you have a reformer with the tower combo, whatever company you have it from. Most all of it's going to work. I know that Balanced Body has a video out on it called Allegro Tower of Power Integrated Workout, and it's by Chrissy Ruby. Chrissy is an awesome teacher. I love the way she thinks. She's very creative and yet very grounded. She's a physical therapist, and just she's got great stuff. I've taken many, many workshops and trainings with her and know her personally, and she's very grounded. She thinks very similar to the way I do. So I think that if you like the way I think about things, you would like the way she thinks about things, if that makes any sense. So I highly recommend that. She's got, it says 22 different exercises on that. So there's lots of different things. And her choreography, she's got good stuff. Okay, now, in answering the other aspect of what you're talking about, you wrote, it says they only use one spring. Classically, the reformer had all the same tension of springs. Okay, so when they say one spring, that's why they're saying that. So if you look at something like Grotz, their equipment, you know, they say they're classical, they're all the same. Okay, so there's not the ability to stair step. And Balanced Body has taken it to the other extreme where you've got so many different choices. You know, there's green, there's red, there's blue, there's yellow. And then not only that, but you can, you know, put it on the buttons, you know, the APEG or, you know, regular kind of thing. And you've got different stair steps that you can do it. You can also adjust where the gear bar goes and all that stuff, spring bar rather. So you can change it in lots of different ways to make it a little more, a little less. They didn't have that back then. So usually when people are talking on training DVDs, if they're trying to make it generic, that's why. That's why they do that. Now, to compare some of the classical stuff or, you know, Stott stuff to the Balanced Body equipment, most of the time the regular one spring is going to be about a green. Okay, they tend to work on heavier springs, heavier tensions than the Balanced Body does, and I don't know that's a good thing. So, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily good to work harder necessarily. I don't think the springs necessarily help people for all the exercises. A lot of times it's too much resistance. You can use your judgment call on that. So I'm saying I like the way the Balanced Body springs feel. I think it's appropriate amount of tension. So if they're only using one spring, it's going to be more like a green or maybe even heavier on a Stott equipment to get the same feeling. So that might help you with that. Now, in terms of Basie does use Balanced Body equipment. So when they say two springs, they're probably referring to two red springs because red is kind of the baseline on Balanced Body. And when they talk about we're using a light spring, they're probably referring to a blue. So red and blue are kind of like the baselines, heavy and light, kind of regular and light. The green and yellow are kind of more fine-tuning and stuff to to go up and down, and those are a little more, I don't know, newer springs, if you will. They aren't, haven't been around as long and stuff, so hopefully that helps. But if you have other questions on that, let me know, because I know that you have different equipment and you've, you know, adapted to balanced body springs. So when you do that, it does beg the questions. You've got some good questions there. All right, so I want to just remind you guys to send me your questions and send them during the week and let me know what you've got going on and what you want to learn about, what areas you have questions about and such. And I'm not sure why my computer's stalling out here, but send them to me and we will get to them on the show and we can really get into your questions. So I just want to finish tonight a little early and just remind you guys to look into what is going on and why are those things going on in your clients and look for those muscle imbalances. So if you have questions on how to deal with those, let me know. I think that we're going to give you guys a couple more weeks through the end of January to finish those self-evaluations and send me any requests for certain areas that you feel that you need to work on as a teacher. And I'm going to get back to you guys on that starting in February. We're going to do a series on that. So far, we've heard a lot about imagery and, let's see, how to assess things and see whether, you know, people, where people's muscle imbalances are, as well as value-adding statements. Those are kind of the big thing. So if you have a vote, so to speak, of what you think your weakness is and what you want more work on, more information on, those three, if there's something else or if you want to just chime in and say, yeah, that's mine, please work on that, let me know. So you've got, I don't know, one or two more weeks. I'm not sure how much we got left here in January. And I will get back with you on that. So I'm going to sign off for tonight, and I want to remind you that I want to spread the word to your client and really try to impart the message to your clients that everybody deserves to enjoy movement. Have a great night. Bye.